This is Great FM.
Hello and welcome back to Great FM, everybody. Ahalya here, keeping you company as we kickstart a brand new season of our podcast series. And it's going to start with a quick little rant about HBO's critically acclaimed series Succession. I don't know how many of you have watched it, but I just got done with all four seasons. And it's very high intensity, insult-filled family drama about this legacy media company called Waystar Roy Co. And basically boils down to its search for a fit leader, right? Suffice it to say, they don't find one by the end of the series. That's not a spoiler alert, I'm sorry. Now, the show is about so much more than just that. But also, I sort of found myself pondering about it and thinking, is it though? Because Brian Cox, the actor who plays Logan Roy, this media giant and father looking for that leader, all he's doing is trying to find a successor. But after four seasons, unbelievable plot twists, really amazing writing and acting, I was left only with one thought, which is that Logan Roy, the father, the titan, this legendary CEO, wanted a successor, but never actually put in the time to raise one. And how many companies do we know that raise good CEOs? Not too many, right? Now, how many companies do we know that resemble failed fathers? Quite a few. Succession planning is one of the most invaluable tracks of strategy in the world of business today, and yet one of the most overlooked and underprepared for. At least that's what I personally feel. So let's talk about how we can all avoid being Logan Roy's and stay away from Waystar Roy Co. fate. Helping us unpack the conversation is Mukta Nakra, Head HR and Sustainability, M&S India. Hi, Mukta. Thank you very much for being with us and also for sticking with me through that rant.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
All right. And just before we, dive into the questions head first, I do want to ask you, have you watched Succession?
I have actually.
Okay, cool. So do you think that was a good analogy for me to draw?
It was fantastic, especially in my profession. These are things that create that cringe moment because it's just too real to watch. It's a space that we kind of navigate through in a very real manner at workplace. So yeah, I mean, absolutely a fantastic analogy.
Okay, awesome. Good to know that we're on the right track. So I think let's start with the basics, Mukta. I did say that I do have a little bit of bias going into this, thinking that succession planning is a very overlooked phenom. How do you really define succession planning, and what branches or specializations of HR professionals does it require to carry out good succession planning within an organization?
Wow, that's a fantastic question to get this conversation kicked off. Succession planning is actually a strategic process. And simply put, it's about identifying and developing internal talent or just a pipeline of people who can fill critical roles in an organization and ensure business continuity during transitions. So it's simply put about identifying and creating leaders for the future and how to prepare them to successfully land in roles. And when you think about, what are some of the aspects or branches that HR professionals should really be thinking about as they get into succession planning, it basically starts with organizational strategy. Okay. And how to create a development plan to align the succession along with the company's strategic goals. And overlay on that, the whole talent management framework. So primarily ensure that you understand your employee base. Mm-hmm. Who are your great performers and who are your high potentials? Now, performance and potential sometimes can be a tricky field to kind of navigate, but equally important for HR leaders to be able to be very clear about what's the difference between performance and potential. And to identify high potential employees, you need to also be able to assess their readiness. How quickly do we think people can grow into leadership roles? Yeah. And that is supported primarily with development and upskilling opportunities. Mm-hmm. So one has to be able to create and curate, a lot of these leadership development programs aren't anymore about a classroom session, but they're bespoke programs that are tailored to ensure that they align with the capability building that you want to do for a particular incumbent. Mm-hmm. And then kind of create opportunities for them to stretch into a wider experience and exposure across the business areas within the organization. But alongside all of these HR skills that I spoke about, I think one thing that stands out in my mind personally is what is the kind of industry insight that HR professionals can bring to the table? Right. How do you keep an eye out around what is the external talent that is available outside? What is their potential? How do we kind of keep an eye on their moves and ensure that we keep a track of who are those possible people that we would want to kind of tap into if there's a need for us to go external? So I think a tricky one at that, you need a combination of skills here.
Yeah.
That kind of supports this whole program and you know, planning around succession.
Okay, awesome. Lots to unpack there. That's a great start for us for this podcast. And you know what? My next question is probably going to come out of some kind of confirmation bias, really. But I came across this Harvard Business Review article, right, talking about succession planning. And in it, they cite a study, and I quote from it, only 54% of boards were grooming a specific successor, and 39% had no viable internal candidates who could immediately replace the CEO if the need arose. And I think you really can't argue with numbers, but it's more important to understand why the situation is the way that it is. Why, Mukhtar, do you think succession planning is not taken as seriously as I think we've all learned it should be taken quite seriously?
Well, yeah, I think many organizational stories are out there for us to kind of read the impact of not kind of focusing on this. But and you know, this article that you mentioned actually also continues, you know, to state that CEO succession is actually amongst the most important director responsibility. And as I said, the business history is littered with cautionary tales of what can happen when succession process goes awry. Almost 10 to 15% businesses appoint new CEOs, whether it's through retirement, resignation, or whatever the reasons are. And despite that, you know, unfortunately, succession planning sometimes is overlooked due to reasons that, in my view, I think boil down to lack of prioritization and preparedness. You know, Ram Charan wrote in 2005 that, and I quote him, that CEOs are being replaced badly and right. Boards aren't finding the right person for the job. In fact, the estimates suggest that up to 40% of new CEOs fail to meet performance expectations within the first 18 months. And that primarily, you know, sometimes in my view happens because, you know, in a very VUCA world that we live in today, sometimes the board end up focusing on really the short-term business results, right? It's always about one quarter to another. And this agenda around succession tends to get deprioritized. Also, there is a certain level of lack of awareness. I think board members don't necessarily understand or pay attention to talent insights or even put a mechanism to ensure that talent insights are put on the table for a conversation every quarter in those board meetings. So is people agenda really at the heart of board members' priorities? Is there proper understanding of the risks associated with poor succession planning and the gaps in leadership and the impact that it can have on the business? I think it's just something that requires long-term continuous focus. And that, I think, gets compromised because of the short-term focus that the board sometimes gets over-indexed on.
That's actually a pretty unique perspective. But you did mention, you know, there's numerous stories out there. Do you think there's any on the other side of that coin that come to mind when you look at succession planning done right?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if you're aware, but, you know, nearly 10% of S&P 500 CEOs are alumni of Procter & Gamble. So P&G is actually widely recognized for its effective succession planning and leadership development strategies. And while, you know, if you look at global CEOs, most of them come from the big four consulting firms. But if you look at one particular organization that personally resonates very deeply with me is actually P&G. And, you know, their philosophy has been very simple. They have successfully implemented succession planning through what they called, quote unquote, build from within.
Okay.
P&G's approach to succession is actually rooted in the belief that the best leaders are developed internally.
Right.
So it's built systematic processes, you know, in terms of how do they hire. Their campus programs are well known within this country as well as outside. And it's an organization that's known to nurture talent from within as a strategic enabler of maintaining continuity and stability in the organization. And I think there are so many wins with this philosophy of building from within. You know, your internal candidates have a cost advantage. You end up building and fostering a culture of loyalty. You also don't lose tacit knowledge. It actually deepens companies' institutional knowledge, you know, when you keep your people within the organization. So it's a known fact, and less than 5% of P&G's hires at senior levels come from outside of the company, which primarily kind of is anchored on these aspects of comprehensive leadership development, talent reviews that I spoke about in my previous response, assessing people and ensuring there is opportunity to upskill, to mentor, so that leaders are like engaged in this whole build from within program. And I think it's just beautiful to kind of study about this. It's just phenomenal what this organization's been able to do.
So that's awesome, because we're definitely going to talk about that a little bit more. I think, you know, the best way to learn is from the real life. So it's good to know that there is an example that one can study carefully and learn from, right? We will unpack the idea of developing talent internally, of course, and the value that that brings. But I think, again, you know, Mukta, for HR professionals who often listen to these podcasts to try and take away some actionable tips, what are the most important strategies or approaches for them when it comes to succession planning that, you know, you would suggest getting started on right away? Because, you know, succession, just the word itself kind of gives you the idea that it's going to take a while, right? So it's not something you can just wake up one day and figure out.
You know, actually, succession planning suffers from complacency. And if one has to kind of keep their eyes focused on succession planning, it has to remain proactive. And proactive to the point that if you have a new CEO starting today, you need to start thinking about their succession today. That's how proactive one needs to be. And to be able to do that, you know, you need to continue to know what your critical roles are. You need to identify who are your high potential colleagues in the organization. Who are those people that you can galvanize to kind of stretch, invest in, create fantastic, customized, bespoke development plans that focus on skills and competencies that not just are needed for these individuals to grow, but also, you know, tie into the future proofing of the organization. How do you pair, you know, these leaders with even more experienced and seasoned leaders to facilitate constant knowledge sharing, knowledge transfer? You know, given the current world that we're living in with AI and so much technology that's, you know, that's disrupting everyday life, there is a constant need for reverse mentoring as well. So how do you ensure you're pairing, you know, experienced leaders who could be, you know, senior leaders, even with younger colleagues, and creating an opportunity and a culture of continuous conversations and continuous learning? And then I think taking these conversations to the board, that responsibility sits with the CHROs. How often do we challenge the agenda that's being put together for the board meetings? What kind of conversations do we take to the NRCs and lead from the front to say, we want to continuously evaluate and update succession plans based on the evolving business needs, based on the evolving employee, you know, expectations, and just the need to ensure that you're continuously improving the pipeline that feeds into succession. So yeah, so to, you know, just summarize this, be proactive about this, ensure that you know your talent and what is it going to take for them to be successful, rally your leadership and internal culture to ensure that there's continuous learning, and put a review mechanism with the directors and the board members around succession to ensure that there is readiness in the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you've already given us some actionable tips, but we've also, you know, touched upon so far in the conversation the value of succession planning. I do want to pull up another, you know, quote that I found pretty much in the same article, actually. It said, a study of the world's 2,500 largest public companies shows that companies that scramble to find replacements for departing CEOs forego an average of $1.8 billion in shareholder value. Now, I do want to point out that succession planning, of course, is greatly important when it comes to business continuity. But aside from just the money, aside from that, you know, what are some of the biggest pitfalls, in your opinion, Mukta, of getting succession planning wrong? Sometimes fear is a good tool to get people to act.
Oh my God, it's like an organizational nightmare if you get the succession planning, already.
Yeah.
But, the top three, four things that come to my mind, I mean, there are actually significant financial implications, which, of course, you've kind of, quoted from the article. But, no one talks about the loss of institutional knowledge. When key leaders leave without a successor, the amount of knowledge and experience that is lost, takes years to build up.
Right.
And while, you may kind of put in steps to figure out, and technology may kind of help, okay, we'll, redeem and kind of recover some of that knowledge. One thing that's completely intangible outcome of this is the decreased morale and uncertainty that the employees can feel within the organization. So if you see the top leader or the leadership team has a certain level of churn without internal, leaders being prepared for such roles, it leads to disengagement and further impacts the turnover rates within the organization across the entire hierarchy.
Right.
That itself can lead to operational disruption. I mean, sudden gaps disrupt businesses. It impacts productivity, it impacts service delivery, and eventually it can have a reputational impact as well, where frequent changes can harm the company's reputation, where, it becomes even more difficult than to attract best talent or top talent from the industry. So it's actually a vicious cycle that you can fall into in absence of proper succession planning that, while there is an immediate loss of knowledge, but the overall impact of decreased morale leading to disruption in your day-to-day delivery and eventually your reputational damage can be quite daunting. And honestly, a lot of organizations are unprepared for what this really entails.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a reality many people, should want to experience. This is one of those things that you don't want to learn from your own mistakes. You kind of want to learn from everybody else's. But Mukta, the one thing that does stick out to me, especially when you said the responsibility falling on the CHRO's shoulders and really being able to challenge an agenda, right? I think for a lot of people who are in those positions, right, where they have the ability to look out for replacements in newer successors in critical positions and roles in an organization, I think it could be also a burdensome thing sometimes because you don't want to get it wrong. There is that pressure of it. And also, you're trying to look for that X factor, right? So what should HR professionals be looking out for in their talent, right, in their talent base? And when do you really know that someone is ready to be brought into that CXO in the making fold or head, in the making fold?
Oh, fantastic question. And I don't know if I have like a tested answer around this. I'm just going to still take a stab. When it comes to looking at a new CEO, it's a high stake decision, right? And there is immense pressure to make the right choice. And that itself can be quite overwhelming. But certain things, I think, personally for me, when I'm, I've had experience of kind of hiring for CEOs now multiple times over, including my current role at M&S. What are some of those things that I would personally look at? And these kind of align with, one is the value system and the culture of the organization, but also the value system of the board. So what is it that board is looking for? And what are those leadership qualities? So more than the experience that someone brings to the table, I think it's really a visionary thinker, a candidate who can articulate a vision about the future of the organization and has the ability to be able to demonstrate how their strategic thinking has really created value for the organization. And I think within the leadership quality, the other aspect would be adaptability. I think how do people navigate change in today's environment? How are they keeping themselves updated around technology, industry trends, the complexity of the businesses? How are they leading through uncertainty? We've gone through, a whole period of pandemic. So I think the whole adaptability factor has now kind of become super critical.
Right.
And of course, I think I cannot overemphasize the culture fit that comes as one of the key factor, specifically when you're going external and not necessarily when you're internal. Though I think even internally, there are CEOs that can fail if they don't understand the shift in culture that happens when you get to the top job.
Yeah.
And then I think overlay on some of these leadership skills will be your interpersonal skills. How empathetic are you? Your emotional intelligence, how you communicate, how do you drive confidence in the shareholders and colleagues? track record of success, like looking at performance metrics, as well as, you know, ability to manage crisis, etc. Just some of the things that have become important to kind of look for in today's, you know, CEO candidate. And equally, if you're kind of, you know, zooming in internally and to your question of what are those indicators for readiness, I think primarily people demonstrating that leadership potential by leading teams and projects through uncertainty, ability to take tough decisions and delivering results, willingness to kind of learn and grow. I think I cannot overemphasize how critical growth mindset is in terms of, you know, how you demonstrate resilience, how do you develop new skills, how do you seek feedback, how do you learn from that feedback as well as from your experiences. I think all of that to me kind of comes across as growth mindset. And I think other than that, it's primarily about ensuring that you have great organization knowledge across wider business aspects. You can't be a you can't just grow from one vertical and become a wider leader. You've got to be able to understand various aspects of the business, from operations to finance, the P&L, the marketing aspects of it, the people aspect of it. So I think the holistic view is essential for effective leadership.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Again, a lot of, you know, insights there that I'm not sure people always keep track of. But you did also bring up the whole culture fit thing. And, you know, we've spoken about this earlier in the conversation as well, the idea of internal versus external successors, Mukta. So do you sort of fall on one side of the fence? Because I imagine it's not a one-size-fits-all solution, of course, because you might find a gem of a person outside of the organization that works just as well. But where do you tend to lean towards, right, when it comes to this particular debate?
I think for me, I do lean towards internal candidates.
Okay.
And there is a positive bias towards them, primarily because a certain level of awareness, you know, as I spoke about institutional knowledge earlier, right? They're familiar with how things are done. They're familiar with the company culture. And promoting from within, personally for me, is a huge EVP, something that boosts employee morale and retention, and creates that healthy competition that people want to be able to do more, right? So for me, I'm definitely kind of biased towards that. Equally, you know, one needs to keep an eye on how do you ensure that you continue to bring fresh perspective and ideas within an organization. And specifically in these times of change and transformation, not all skills that you need in an organization kind of exist. So you do need to keep an eye on external candidates. And ultimately, I think it is a hybrid approach that evaluates both internal and external candidates that, in my view, will yield best results.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good case for internal talent. Well, Mukta, I think this has been a fantastic conversation. I'm so very glad that we got your time because this is one of those, like I was saying, phenom. And I think, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I do think that my bias was okay, right? Like, I don't think a lot of people paid too close attention to it early on where, you know, it's really the time to actually keep thinking about it. I think complacency, you were right, is probably the root cause of it all, because there are so many other problems to deal with on a day-to-day that you don't really think about this one until it comes and smacks you in the face. So I think it's a worthy conversation that we've had. Now, we've started this new segment on Great FM, which is called the Reading List, to help HR professionals out there, you know, first of all, just share your knowledge with them and also help them sort of take actionable tips from literature that is available to them. So if you could quickly run our listeners through books that you believe can make you good at succession planning, give you that little edge as an HR professional, I'm sure our listeners would really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a topic that's really close to my heart. So happy to share some of the books that I have read and books that I keep going back to as well, because, you know, this is a continuous journey that we're on.
The Great FM Reading List. Not just good, get great with these books.
So top three books for me would be, you know, Succession, Are You Out There? By Marshall Goldsmith. And there is Leadership Pipeline by Ram Charan. There's also Succession, Mastering the Make or Break Process of Leadership Transition by Noel Tichy. But I think my favorite of all is a book called It's Not the How or the What, But the Who by Claudio Fernandez. And he's from Egon Zehnder. And I think what I like about the book is just how simply he's kind of put some of the principles and guidelines for busy directors around succession planning. It's very, very simple. He's put these six succession planning guidelines for people to read. It's very simple, very easy to assimilate, as well as very easy to act on if you're building your own action, you know, list around how do you want to go about succession planning. So I really do recommend people to read that.
All right. Well, that was an awesome list. I can't say that I've read any of those books, but after today's conversation, I'm definitely excited to explore the idea of succession planning more, as I'm sure most of our listeners are as well. Thank you so much, Mukta, for being with us on Great FM. This is a really wonderful podcast, I think, to kick the season off with and come back to our audience with. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having this conversation with you.
All right, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be bringing you a lot more episodes on the series. Of course, we're back, but a strong one to get us started. Stay safe and stay happy. We'll see you very soon.
This is Great FM.